When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Hi, I'm Dan from Desert Island Dicks. This show features Michelin-starred chef Tom Kerridge. This is a retro episode, an old dick, if you will. We put this out a while back now, but there's a new series of Great British Menu, and Tom is one of the judges. So we thought we'd just put this episode out there again, as it's been one of our most popular episodes. So in case you'd missed it the first time around, we wanted to share it again. Tom is also our only guest who has been on both Desert Island Dicks and Desert Island Discs. So that was a rare honour that, I mean, only he holds. So, well done, Tom. And thanks for coming along, I guess. Anyway, that's it from me. Enjoy this episode of the wonderful Tom Kerridge on Desert Island Dicks. Hi, I'm Dan Benedictus, and welcome to Desert Island Dicks, the show that sees you marooned on a desert island after a plane crash with the worst people and worst things imaginable. Who they are and why they're a dick is up to our guest, and here to share their Desert Island Dicks with us today is chef, restaurateur, and he's also got a new book out, Tom Kerridge. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, my friend. I'm looking forward to being marooned on an island, or maybe I'm not. I'm not quite sure which one.
Well, I mean, I guess the how bad it is sort of depends on your choice. That we're going to find out. So, it's up to you, I guess.
It may be quite ropey.
Yeah, exactly. What sort of mood are you in today? How do we find you today?
I'm good. I've got to be honest. It doesn't fluctuate too much. It's fairly standardly. I would say pretty much sits around 85% positivity.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, obviously we've not met before. The vibe we get from you, you know, I've seen you on telly and things like that. You seem a very upbeat person. So was it difficult choosing a list of people and things that you hate?
No. Quite simply. No, I mean, I'm always quite good at being up. I genuinely wake up in normally a good space pretty much every day. But I don't really dislike too many people. I like people, but there are certain traits about people. That's more like where I was looking with this, is traits about people that I'm not always biggest fans of. And then you got to find someone that fits into that. And that was, some of them were easier than others.
Okay. Well, I'm very interested to hear what we're going to get. So let's get straight into it. Who's going to be the first person joining you on the island today?
Well, to be honest, it was politicians, right? And it's not that they're not important, and it's not that politics aren't important. I just get so fed up of talking and listening to sentences that go round and round in circles that have never answered a question. And it drives me absolutely nuts. And this isn't a political statement. It could be from any party, and it could be because they're all guilty of it. However, the one that I think is probably the worst, and it was a toss-up between Matt Hancock and Gavin Williamson, but I'm going to go with Gavin Williamson because he's just... I mean, it's almost toe-cringingly, curlingly, embarrassingly the way that politicians behave or talk on. And it's been quite a weird thing during this pandemic and the whole... Because all of our lives, comedians, chefs, restaurateurs, musicians, actors, like just like everybody's life has suddenly become run by politicians. So all of a sudden, people whose jobs were kind of existing to how you run your life and how you make your life, but you're still making those decisions, you get on with it, and the decisions that politicians might make kind of half affect your life, and they do, and you vote for a particular reason in a particular way. But then all of a sudden, this pandemic has put politicians at the forefront of everybody's decision making about everybody's life, and it's kind of exposed them for how, how ultra pathetic a load of them are, how not straight talking, how not honest they are, how all over the place they are, and why they won't ever answer a straight question drives me absolutely nuts.
Yeah, because I guess, as you say, like, you know, in a lot of life, when things are kind of just sort of ticking along, you know, there's always some kind of crisis, but, you know, not on this scale. So it's quite easy to generally sort of bluff your way through stuff a lot of the time, and it's like, well, that'll just, yeah, it'll get sorted out later. Whereas now it's like, you haven't got answers, and this is unprecedented, and you do need to give a concrete answer and not just sit on the fence about stuff.
100%.
It's like in a war or something.
Well, that's it, exactly. And I think politicians have been just massively exposed, because quite often you can go with, you know, we are looking for answers and honesty, and we're looking for straight talking decision making, and quite often it never happens. And I don't envy any of them. Like, you know, I don't envy this government in any way in terms of what they've had to face this year. Like, in terms of their decision making. But and you hear it said so many times that, yeah, but, you know, it's been very, very difficult for this government and everyone around. Yeah, but that still doesn't excuse them being rubbish at their job, does it? Do you know what I mean? Mm. You could still be, I know it's a really difficult thing, but if you're rubbish at your job, but now we've just found rubbish people in charge of things where we need really good people, we need solid decision makers, and, you know, to oversee. And I've picked on Gavin Williamson just solely because, you know, the way that I think the education system has been dealt with, it's not the health thing, because you could always pick on that. And Matt Hancock has had a very difficult, he's talking about people's lives, you know, we're talking about, health, we're talking about life and death, right? And decision making that he's making. Gavin Williamson is talking about, he's having to deal with students' GCSEs, he's talking about, you know, kids' education. And it just seems that he's got so much of it wrong. And then there's never been a straight talking answer to getting it right, or admitting that they've got it wrong. Those are the things that drive me absolutely nuts. So it could be a generalization of any politician that doesn't answer questions in a straight and honest manner. Or I've just picked on Gavin Williamson because I just find him, I think he's probably the worst.
Yeah, I mean, and as you say, stiff competition. It's a weird thing with politicians, isn't it? Because most things, it's like, right, you want to do this job, you need to do training for it. Like, you know, you want to work in a restaurant, you know, whether front of house or cooking or whatever, you know, you need to do the appropriate training so you have the skills. Whereas being a politician, it's like you sort of want to be a politician, and then they'll put you in charge of something massive that you've got no expertise in. It's like, oh, right, Gavin, well, now you're going to be in charge of education. I know it was something else before, but this year you're going to be in charge of this huge thing with massive consequences that you've got no idea about. And you're like, and why should you? Because you were doing something else last year and you never trained for this. It's just such a crazy way of living, isn't it?
It's absolutely bizarre, isn't it? I find the whole thing ludicrous and ridiculous, that I know we then rely on the civil service to get it all right, and for them to direct the politicians in the correct manner, in the right way, and with the helping them with their decision making. But it does sound like, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, Gavin Williamson has not been a head teacher or a university a lecturer or principal, you know, but all of a sudden he's found himself in charge of them all. It is absolutely bonkers. It's like saying to me, right, you're now in charge of Heathrow Airport this year. It's like, what? I mean, how would that ever happen? But it does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the food quality's obviously gone up, but the planes are very late.
Exactly. Yeah. They're taking off in the wrong direction. No one knows where they're going. Exactly. But everyone's having a lovely meal.
Yeah. So, I mean, You know, you said you're quite an upbeat person. How would you feel about being stuck on an island then with Gavin Williamson? I mean, do you think, would you, are you the sort of person that would snap when he's just going round in circles or sort of bigging himself up for things that he didn't really achieve?
Yeah, there would come a point where I go, look, mate, you just have to be on it. The one thing, and this is what makes hospitality such a beautiful industry to work in, and it's brilliant, because you can't blag your way. You can't pretend, you know, you learn your trade and you get better at it. And the same, you know, customers and guests that come in the restaurant, they're now educated, they understand food, people know what they want, they watch cookery programs, they read magazines, they do whatever, they cook themselves loads at home, so people have an understanding of how to get to a process, and people like good service, and you can't pretend to be something else, and there's no excuse, there's nowhere to hide, and there's no, you know, so you've got the one thing about the hospitality industry, it's always full of like really straight talking, honest doers, people that get things done, and so in the end, if you weren't honest and straight, and this is the biggest thing, right? I don't think many people in this country would mind if politicians went, yeah, I proper got this wrong here. Like, I'm really sorry. This is what we've learned from this, and we're going to move on from it. Do you know what I mean? But they don't. They never admit they're wrong. What they constantly do is just try and swerve it and try and blame something else or do something. But that doesn't wash anymore, I don't think, with us at home. We kind of like, we like honesty. We like direct. We don't like a direct. Because you can always forgive somebody if they go, do you know what? I really got this wrong. We learn from it. And next time we're going to do this, or we're going to move on. And that's where I think the difference between the hospitality industry and politicians are. Maybe that's the difference between not just everybody and politicians.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems to be quite a standout trait. And I suppose, yeah, obviously it isn't an easy job, but I think if you just suspected that they cared a bit either way, you know, and just went, you know, yeah, I've dropped the ball, I'm really sorry. But just sort of going, oh, no, I don't agree at all that it was a failure, you know. And it's like, well, you know, I know the media spin things a bit, but we've got a rough idea of how this went down, you know.
Yeah, we can see it with our own eyes. I mean, you may not be calling it a vaccine passport, changing the word passport to certificate, still, well, we can see through this. We're not that stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Fair enough. Okay, so that's one person you're stuck with on the island. And who's going to be the next person joining you?
All right, so I went to a school where it was full of like naughty boys, and I liked hanging around with the naughty boys, and it was a good laugh. And I like people that are a little bit extreme and don't really live by the rules and just do kind of what they want. Their moral compass is in the correct place, but don't always conform to society and get on doing their own route, going their own way, dressing how they want, saying what they want, doing what they want, as long as it's not harming anybody else or being, you know. So I like people that break the rules and stretch the boundaries and do stuff. I like hanging around with that. So somebody who's the complete opposite of that, I couldn't think of anybody worse to spend time with than you might be on it. You know, He-Man, like the cartoon. Yeah. So like Prince Adam before he's He-Man has to be the dullest, most square, most boring person to spend any time with. That man is a fun sponge. Like, everything about him is that I couldn't think of anything more dull than hanging out with Prince Adam from He-Man.
That's definitely the first time he's been chosen on here, so I think that's a very good choice. Yeah, I can't even really remember him that much, and I loved him when I was young. I love watching He-Man and stuff, but he's just a kind of a very normal do-goody prince, isn't he?
Oh, mate, he's just so dull. He's just the like, you know, stay between the lines, do the right thing, always be nice, never, like, you know, never have a cigarette, never have a drink, never do anything that's any fun ever, and you'll never ever get told off. And it's just like, I mean, it's so mind-numbingly, like, the idea of spend, like, you know, all right, 2 minutes with him and you walk away going, yeah, he's a really lovely, pleasant bloke. I wouldn't want to be stuck on an island with him. And that's the first thing that'd be in my head. So now I'm stuck on an island with him. Like Prince Adam from He-Man would be a different thing. Maybe if we could create chaos and mayhem somewhere, that he'd have to turn into He-Man. Like, I don't know if you follow Grumpy Skeletor on Twitter, right?
Cause oh,
if,
yeah.
If you don't, you should, because see, Grumpy Skeletor, I would want to spend time with, and he is the complete opposite of He-Man. So maybe if you created something like Chaos and Mayhem, He-Man turned up, then it might be a little bit better. But when he goes back to being Prince Adam, not for me. Dull.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I guess it's the same with his cat as well, because Battle Cat before is Cranger, who's like a sort of cowering tiger and everything. Yeah. So it's like, that's a weird thing as well. And it's not like they... I mean, I suppose, how does he... He gets the power of Grayskull, doesn't he? So I suppose he has a sort of spell that transforms him. So I suppose that's the kind of... Because I was like, how can you suddenly be so different? You know, but I guess it's just witchcraft, isn't it? I was thinking, actually, like the other day, that... Because I remember, and I think they maybe did this on a couple of cartoons back in the 80s, but I remember on He-Man, at the end, there was always like a separate little bit that was like, give you a little lesson.
Yeah, like that? A and little like, moralistic story. And remember, kids. Yeah.
Do you remember when she was running without looking where she was going? She tripped over that rock and almost fell into the jaws of that giant spider. Well, remember, look when you're running. And it's like, I'm four. Yeah. Well, of course I'm not going to look when I'm running.
Exactly that. See, I would not want to spend the whole, like, however long I'm trapped on this island with someone constantly moralistically pointing out to me that I should have been looking which way I was going before I was running, and be very careful when I'm setting fire to something of the campfire to cook. Like, I mean, I would honestly, it would just be so dull. Like, I'm already having a little bit of cold sweats about the thought of hanging out with Gavin Williamson and Adam from He-Man. It's like, that for me is it's pretty poor. It's bad. It's bad. That's a bad couple of people.
Yeah, because at least with He-Man, he'd be going, now, listen, Tom, remember, be careful when you're gathering coconuts over there, because, you know, if they fall, I remember once I had to do this, and he was like, oh, yeah, tell me the story about how something bad happened, and then you saved everyone. Whereas you're only getting the first part of that story with Prince Adam, aren't you?
Like, exactly.
Just the vanilla version of everything.
Yeah, and if He-Man was there, like, at least you could like mess around with his massive, like, his great big sword, smashing up stuff, cutting things down, doing stuff. You could have a ride on Battle Cat. You could do, you know, all of it. You could have a bit more fun. But if you were with Prince Adam and Cringe, like this dull cat that was just asleep by the fire, and some bloke telling you some really uninteresting story about how to look left and right before you cross the road. I mean, it's just not. That's not a space I'd want to be. I'd try swimming. I'm fairly certain. I would just leave, swim, and keep going. And then I'd get into trouble, and then He-Man would come and rescue me.
Yeah. But I wonder if maybe he couldn't. I mean, because I guess, does he have to be at Grayskull to get the power of Grayskull? Can he just get it anywhere, or does he have to be sort of in the right sort of area?
Yeah.
I don't know if he needs to be in the right postcode or it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, he has to be like in zones 1 and 2 in London, otherwise it doesn't reach that far.
Yeah, like a bad Wi-Fi signal or something. Yeah, because I think often on this podcast, like, what I find is quite often it's like, things that can sometimes be the worst thing are something that's very close to being brilliant, but just not quite there, you know. And that's a perfect example of that, I think.
I don't think Gavin Williamson is a bad person, and I don't think Prince Adam definitely not a bad person. Just dull.
Yeah.
Just dull.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think in the setting of a desert island, you know, you could forgive a lot of people's past lives just to sort of concentrate on the here and now, but they've got to come with some chat, you know.
Yeah, they've got to have a bit of banter, haven't they? They've got to have some form of personality.
I think that's a really good choice. And who's going to be the third person rounding off your selection for the island?
So last one is a character, Annie Wilkes. Now, I don't know if that rings a bell or not. So Annie Wilkes is a character played by Kathy Bates in Misery. Have you ever seen Misery? So Misery is the movie where there's an author, a very famous author, who has a car crash in the snow and is really badly injured in the middle of nowhere. And then he wakes up and he's been rescued by this woman and wakes up in her house. And it's and he's very grateful for her rescuing him. But he finds that he's badly injured and he's beginning to heal. But she's actually like a mentally crazed super fan that is hugely obsessed, that would have a massive amount of restraining orders out on him and all sorts. And so she then is obsessed by him and the books that he writes and does not let him escape or leave the room or the house that they're in, to the point where there's a bit where she puts a big block between his legs and snaps his ankles with a mallet where he tries getting it. Like, it's properly like full on psycho lunacy. And so someone who's a slightly obsessive or massively over obsessive crazed super fan that would be prepared to smash your ankles with with sledgehammers is someone who I would not want to be trapped on an island with, unless of course she was a massive super fan of Prince Adam.
That's a very wise choice. Yeah, it's, you know what, I'd forgotten that's the character's name, but as soon as you said Misery, I was like, hobbling. That the word hobbling when she does the thing to the ankles, it just, I think, I can't remember much of the film, but that bit will stay with me forever.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that not much else happens in the film, or like the bloke tries to escape and he's not allowed to leave. She doesn't let him leave, and he knocks. She's got all these like weird little trinkets in the house, and he knocks, I think it's like a little porcelain penguin figure over, and then he picks it up and he puts it back, but it's facing the wrong way. So then you go, oh no, she's going to know that it's facing the other way. And then he gets back in his room, and you know, that's the point that you think, oh, she knows. And that's the point where she goes to smash his legs so that she knows he can't escape. She just doesn't want him to escape or leave ever. And apart from that, I don't really know. I can't think what else happens in the movie apart from it's quite psychologically full on, like pretty horrible fan obsessive. And it's a bit, so that's it. Yeah, but you do think of the hobbling bit. It's horrible. It's a horrible movie.
But I think someone like that with that kind of personality on the island, I mean, obviously, that's not a good person to have on the island, but I think they'd really lull you into a false sense of security as well, because it'd start off and you'd be like, do you know what? She's all right. Maybe she's got better. Like, I think, you know, she seems quite kind, actually. And then one day she'd be like, now, Tom, don't go over to that side of the island again, because when she give you a reason, you're like, okay. And then the next day she's like, where'd you get that coconut? I think I told you not to go over to that site. And you're like, oh no. Yeah. You know, so it's kind of built, you know, at least if she was just crazy from the beginning, you're like, right, I know what I'm dealing with now. But you'd kind of be lulled into that sort of sense of like, oh, maybe it's okay. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you know what the worst thing about it is, right? I don't think we'd ever be able to escape either. That'd be the problem, because she's obviously a super fan. She's a super fan obsessive of Prince Adam, Gavin Williamson and myself, right? That's all three of us. She's a super fan of all three of us. That then when you see the ship that's coming, that's perhaps coming to rescue us, she would make it go away. She would say, it would make it, no, we're all fine. We're all just staying here, because it would ruin her plan of us being able to escape and get on with our normal real lives. So, yeah, I think if she was on there, I don't think there would ever be any escape, ever.
Yeah, I just like the idea of like someone with that personality and then someone like Gavin Williamson having a conversation. It's just such a odd combination of people. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, and then Prince Adam explaining to her that smashing people's ankles in with sledgehammers is moralistically unjust, and you know the moral of the story is you must always let people make their own decisions and walk away if they want to, or something really boring.
Yeah, and then even when she gets bad, he can't help you because he's not He-Man. You know, he's almost He-Man and he can't be.
It's just the pathetic shell of He-Man, a husk of He-Man.
Oh, that's a really good trio of people. I think that's a very good, awkward choice for the island. Okay.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Well, Tom, mercifully, amongst the wreckage of the plane, there was some food and drink left over. Unfortunately for you, it's your least favourite food and drink in the world. What are they and why are they so bad?
Well, it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be two things that probably people really love. And first, so it's going to be lobster, right? So obviously there's loads of people who'd be loving that, think it's the best thing ever. How could you not have a lobster on it? I mean, lobster's amazing. It's almost like the king of the sea. It's this crustacea that's been around for years and years and years and it lives for such a long time and it cooks beautifully. You could cook it on open fires. You can poach it. You can do all sorts with it. It takes on wonderful flavours. It's an amazing thing. Except I've got a shellfish allergy. So I would have to spend the whole time, obviously being the chef, cooking it. So I would be smelling this lobster, cooking the lobster, obviously for Gavin, Prince Adam and Annie Wilkes, but never, ever being able to eat it. So it would be, lobster is the food that I would is my worst nightmare to have there.
Because, I mean, as a chef, for you, even though you know it's basically poison for you, is it also still impossible for you to see people cook it badly? Would you have to step in and go, look, come on, you can't treat that ingredient like that. Let me do it.
Exactly,
you hated these people.
Yeah, exactly that. I can't bear watching other people cook things badly. Like, you know, you're round at friends' houses or the in-laws or my mum's house or something, and they go to cook lunch or something. I've just got to do it because it's just... It's less fuss. It's a lot easier. It's what I do. I know what I'm doing. It's going to be, the end result's going to be better. I just can't bear to sit back and watch somebody else do it, even if it's something that I can't eat. So I would spend my days constantly cooking lobster for three people that I don't want to be with. It sounds like this is turned into the worst nightmare ever.
Yeah, watching people you hate eat incredible food that you have cooked and can't eat.
So lobster would be there. And then the drink would be something that is incredibly trendy and everybody... Well, I don't know, everybody kind of... I think they pretend they like it. Or that they want to drink it because it's healthy and it's trendy and it's great. It's kombucha. So for me, I am not a kombucha fan. Like something that's fermented and bubbly, that is supposed to be good for your stomach. I think it just gives you wind or the shits. It's just not. I am not a kombucha fan. I got to be honest. It's not diet tonic. Or see, I'm not a drinker. I'm a non-drinker now. I haven't drunk for nearly 8 years. So it's kind of like, you know, it's not Canestella either, is it? If you want something that's got bubbles and fermented a little bit, why aren't you drinking lager?
It's a weird thing, isn't it? Because it's like, if I want something, I'd rather just have an overall healthy diet than have to add that into my diet. Do you know what I mean? I think there's other things that are good for my gut health that I can enjoy, you know, like kimchi or something. But then like, but having like these sort of drinks, I'm like, can I not just be healthy in other ways? Do you know what I mean? Because if I want if I'm going to go to the shop and buy a drink, it feels annoying to then not have something nice come out of that, you know? It's like when people go, oh, like, these berries, like, goji berries are really good for you. They're, like, better than, like, this many of an equivalent fruit. And you're like, I'd rather have more of the other fruit that tastes nicer. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do get the power of superfoods and I do get how it helps and boosts and all this sort of stuff, but do you know what I mean? Can't we just have extra orange juice in the morning? You know, what can't we have, you know... What about just some yogurt? What about some, you know, things that it's just not for me. So kombucha and lobster is not, however, I'm pretty certain that Prince Adam lives off that. Do you know what I mean? I'm fairly certain that, like, I mean, he's a fine specimen of human being. I mean, he's got shoulders like Adam Peaty the swimmer and a six pack like you wouldn't believe. I mean, he's super fit, isn't he? So he's definitely all about gut health. He's definitely drinking loads and loads of kombucha. And, you know, he's a prince. So he's got to be caning lobster, breakfast, lunch and dinner. So, you know, it turns, I would end up just being Prince Adam's personal food and beverage manager by the looks of it.
I love the idea of Prince Adam's all about gut health, isn't it? That's a great quote. It's a really good quote. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's so cruel to have to cook something delicious that you can't eat for people that you hate. I just think it's such a perfectly nightmarish scenario. I think you nailed that, Tom. So fair enough.
This desert island is getting worse by the minute. The more we talk about it, it's horrible.
Okay, well, I'm going to distract you, but again, with something unpleasant, because fortunately, you won't be without entertainment on the island. The plane's entertainment system continues to work, but just your luck, it only has two working settings. One is your least favourite film of all time, and the other is your least favourite song. What are they and why?
It's got to be... And there's so many songs, right? You could have picked, like, Barbie Girl. You could have picked... I mean, there's just so many, like, rubbish. Anything by Mr. Blobby. Anything by Jive Bunny. And, like, all these, like, awful, awful... However, I got to pick Mustang Sally. Like, and I just cannot bear it. So I was born in the 70s and grew up in the 80s. And the early 90s was probably the point of going out proper for the first time. Like, being... And that's kind of when karaoke was kind of becoming quite a thing. And it's also when The Commitments, the movie. Now, The Commitments movie is all right, like, in terms of the kind of movie. It's all right. Like, it's an all right film about musicians. And it's quite, so it's quite a little, it tries to be edgy, but it's not that edgy. But it's, but the Mustang Sally bit that people just sing, like pub singers, like blokes that think they're really good singers, that whole, I mean, what's it even about, Mustang Sally? I mean, what are we talking about here? We're in Northern Europe. We're free. Why are we singing about American car? It's just, I just cannot bear that track at all. In fact, just everything about it makes me, it makes me curl, cringe, like I can't bear. I just imagine really poor, bad karaoke from the 90s with people singing Mustang Sally, and that's that. I it would drive me more. I'd rather eat the lobster and die than listen to Mustang Sally more than twice on repeat.
You make a good case for it, definitely. I think yeah, it's that sort of thing, like, as you say, like someone at a karaoke doing it badly, and you know outside they've got like a bit of a ropey muscle car that they've imported and they won't stop going on about, even though they live somewhere with really small roads and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
and you go back
and
to
they
their
probably
house
still live at their mum's,
yeah, but in their bedroom they've got like some, like, you know, cow horns hung up or something.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, and CB radio,
yeah with a nice call sign. Oh, you know, call me Tex. Like, no.
Yeah.
Call Jonathan.
Yeah. Exactly that. Yeah, exactly that. That kind of, that false pretend hood of it all. I can't bet. And it's just that track is just, I just find it, I can't bear it. Like, I just can't bear it.
Because there's some other good songs in that sort of soundtrack, aren't there? Like, it's quite sort of, you know, it's good, like some good soul and stuff like that. But yeah, that really sort of snuck in there, didn't it?
It is. Yeah, no, there is some brilliant kind of soul music. It's like, it is not a bad film with some good tracks. There's just something about that track, everything about it, I can't bear it. Can't bear it.
I think it's in the same sort of camp as like that Black Betty song, you know,
yeah,
the Ram Jam.
Exactly. Again, the same. Yeah.
And people do that at karaoke as well. It's like, what is this song? Yeah. Why are we playing this?
Yeah, it's so bad, isn't it? And there's a lot of them that sit in that camp, that karaoke. Everyone kind of half knows the words. They want to be involved in it. It makes them all of a sudden feel that they're really cool musicians and they're singers because they know a few of the words. It's just, I hate it. I can't bear it at all.
I think this might be the one that I've seen you like get the most angry about, I think. So.
Yeah, it drives me nuts, that.
Yeah, it definitely conjures up a certain kind of person who I think in their own right could just be on the island as an annoying person. So, yeah.
Do you know what would be the worst about it? Is if it was Gavin Williams' favourite song, Williamson's favourite song, and he loves to sing it at karaoke.
You could imagine that, though. He's the sort of person that you're like, oh, look, people might think I'm this straight-laced politician, but I've actually got a collection of over 5 pairs of cowboy boots at home. You know, and that's his thing.
Yeah, well, no, that is a vision that I'm not sure I'd want to see. I've got to be honest. And I do a really mean Mustang Sally sing-along. Right, yeah, now this is getting a lot worse. This is getting a lot worse.
Okay, what would your film choice be then?
It's a genre, right?
Okay.
So I mean you could pick any one of them, and it's musicals. Now I get movies and I love them. I love watching films. They're brilliant, and I quite like going to the theatre. I never quite 100% get into it. Weirdly, I find theatre just a little bit it's everything's a bit over acted. It's a bit over because you've got to reach the back of the auditorium and you've got to, like, I get it, but I like being in theatres. I like going to watch stand-up comedy, or I like going to watch live music, and I love all of that sort of stuff. But I don't like, I'm a huge supporter of the arts, and but musicals, I just don't get, right? Because there is that bit between, you're telling a story, right? So act the story, tell the story, be the film, do what. Why are you singing me a story? Like, I'm 47. I don't need a lullaby. I just, why are you singing this? I just don't get it. So the movie could be Grease. It could be Les Mis. This isn't my world. This isn't one that I appreciate that these guys have trained very hard. They're incredible singers. It's amazing. But you're singing me a story. I'm out. Sorry, I'm out.
Yeah, because it's sort of theatre for people who don't like theatre and music for people who probably don't like music that much. I don't know, it's like there's a real style of musical singing that is different to, it's like, technically I get that you've got a strong voice and you're in tune, but there's something about it that I can't put my finger on. It's really like, it's, you could sing any song in that style and it's just like, I just don't like, it's like a bit too loud and a bit too sort of something a bit brash about it. And yeah, it's just like any song that I love in sung by somebody who does musical theatre is just like, oh.
It's weird, isn't it? See, you could say that when you see things like, not that I'm its biggest fan or anything, but I have seen it a few times, things like The Voice or Britain's Got Talent or whatever. It's when someone sings a song and they're really good. Like The Voice is a prime example. You've got people that sing songs and they're great. And then you have someone from musical theatre who comes on there and sings what is essentially a well-known rock or pop song or something like that. And it suddenly takes it into this weird space, doesn't it? It makes it become a performance. I mean, it doesn't feel real anymore. I think that's what it is. I like realness. And the moment you're singing me a story, you're now out of character. You're not the actor or something. You're now, no one in real life. I don't sing to my friends that I'm going to the petrol station to fill my car up. And whilst I'm there, I'll buy some pork scratchings. Do you know what I mean? Like, no one sings that in their life, do they? So you come out of character and you become this something else, and that, yeah, so I'm not really into musical theater.
I tell you what's funny, like, because see, like, opera is, you know, like the sort of high end of these things, and like, I've been to a couple of operas, like I went with my mum on her birthday once, and what I thought is funny is because it's all sort of generally in like a foreign language, they get away with loads, but then, like, you know, they have like the subtitles sometimes, they have like a little screen above, and like there's this man just belting out this incredible voice and it's really powerful. But there's loads of stuff that you don't realise until you, like, read it, that it's just setting the scene. And he's, like, belting out, and he's like, here in the square, it's a lovely day, woman selling flowers, over there, there's the baker, hello to everyone. And it's just, like, mundane shit, but it's delivered in this, like, incredible, huge voice. And you're like, oh, right, he's just talking about it's a nice day, and it's not even got to the bit about, like, there is the woman who I love and I must, you know, must defy all others for her heart and all this.
He's essentially, like, reading a child's book in a foreign language, but singing it. That's essentially what's happening. It's like a child's reading book being sung at the best as he can in Italian. I mean, what is that about?
I think it's a very good summary of it. Yeah, definitely.
That's my heathen example of what opera is. Yeah, my understanding of opera is that someone essentially sings a child's reading book in a foreign language as loud as they can.
Fair enough. Nice. Okay, so musicals are going on with you then. Fair play. Now, Tom, finally, the island is overrun by the biggest dick of all the animals. Which animal is it and why?
Yeah, I think it's probably got to be, I mean, of all the ones that you don't want to be on an island with. Now, I'm not normally into animals, but I've got a five-year-old son who absolutely, he's mad about him. He loves them. So I'm learning more about animals than, like, I ever paid any interest in it when I was at school. However, he's mad into anything carnivores. He's mad into anything that kills and eats. He's just all over it. He loves them. He loves watching that. Not like cartoons of it, like the real stuff, like on YouTube, like animals eating stuff. Like, I'm like, okay, all right, what is it? I mean, it's real life, is it? But the one that's like the most crazy, a hungry polar bear. I mean, that is someone who you do not want to spend time with. That is like, that is somebody who's, I mean, irrespective, I mean, they just, you know, your time on that island is not going to be there very long if you are sharing it with a hungry polar bear. So I'm going for the animal that I really don't want to spend any time with is a hungry polar bear.
Fair enough, yeah. And I mean, do you know what? I think bears are one of those things that they sort of can look quite cuddly and nice, but then also terrifying. And especially like the thing about the proportions of a polar bear, they sort of look a bit less scary than like a grizzly bear, you know, because their head's slightly smaller or something's a bit, proportionally, there's something a bit more cuddly about them.
Well, they're also the sort of thing that kids' toys, they're white and they're fluffy and they sit and they're lovely, and people associate them with winter and they're on Christmas cards and they're all of those sort of things. You go, oh, polar bears, they're amazing. But they're like twice the size of a grizzly bear, aren't they? The biggest bears or something like that. And then if you actually watch like proper wildlife programs with polar bears in them, they're not actually white. Most of them are a little bit grey, and then when they've eaten something, they are red. They're covered in dripping blood and bits of animals. There is nothing cuddly or Christmassy about them. They're like they're like vicious animals, predators that will tear you limb from limb.
Yeah, and I heard this thing about, I don't know if it's all bears, but I heard this thing about bears that like most animals, like a tiger or something, will kill you and then eat you. A bear doesn't bother, it just starts eating.
And that makes it even worse.
Like, they just go, okay.
I mean, it's just
they'll just stand on you and then just keep eating. And that's like, I don't know if it's all bears, as I say, in case, you know, in case any sort of,
in case you offend a koala.
I don't want someone to write and go, you got that wrong about bears. I mean, I would say our audience is fairly tolerant about me just mouthing off about all kinds of shit. But yeah, that is like just such a chilling thing to know about them. So
that makes it loads worse, that you could be pinned watching him eat your arm. Like, I mean, you could have at least have the respect of like chewing through my throat first so that I died and then eat my arm. But no, you're like, you know, what happens if he likes feet first? What happens if he likes like, what happens if he likes white trainers and toes first? And then like, you're proper done, aren't you? You're eating from the bottom up. I mean, that's even worse. It'd take ages.
Well, I suppose maybe because, you know, people like the dark meat or the white meat on chicken. There's no reason that the polar bear doesn't have the same thing.
Yeah, I got to be honest, though, of all the delicacies that you're going to eat off mine, my feet, and they're not my strongest point. I got to be honest. If you were going to eat anything first, I'd have gone for the arse. That's the one with the most meat on it and also plenty of fat and padding. So if you're any polar bears out there that's going to get stuck on an island with me and you want to eat me, just eat me from the arse first, because that's the best meat.
Well, Tom, I think that's probably a fitting place to draw this to a close, I think. That's great. Thank you so much for coming on Desert Island Dicks today. Now, what have you got going on at the minute? Because obviously it's been like a tough period for chefs and people in hospitality, but what's going on with you at the minute?
So we got the new book coming out, which is great. It's all about outdoor cookery, which would probably work brilliantly on a desert island. So, you know, it's not just barbecues, it's all sorts of bits and bobs for cooking outside, and it's kind of features loads of recipes and dishes from around the world. So that comes out very soon, and it's got loads of lovely flavors in it, and it's most definitely the sort of thing that you should pack with you to take to your desert island. It's quite thick, so you could use it, if you had enough copies of them, you could build them together as a life raft and use it to escape from Gavin Williamson, Prince Adam and Annie Wilkes.
Perfect, brilliant. Well, like, if we didn't need any more encouragement to buy it, you've sold it beautifully. That's great. Well, thank you once again for coming on Desert Island Dicks. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you,
Dad. It's a pleasure, Chief. Thank you very much, mate.
There you go. That was our retro episode. That was Tom Kerridge there on Desert Island Dicks. Lovely man. It was great to speak to him. As ever, I'd like to take this opportunity to invite you to be a part of Desert Island Dicks. Our spin-off podcast, Compact Dicks, awaits you. We want your submissions for who and what you think is a dick and would hate to be stuck with on an island. Get in touch with us, dickspod.com/contact, and you can fill out a form and let us know who and what you'd hate to be stuck on an island with, or you can get in touch with us, slide into our DMs on Twitter and Instagram @DixPod. That's it for now. I'm going to keep it short and sweet,
And we'll be back with another episode of Desert Island Dicks very soon. Bye.